Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, deepen your understanding of God's Word, and even heighten your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, here's the question to get today's conversation started. If you have adult children, maybe you've asked yourself questions like these. Is it okay to give advice to my adult children? What's the difference between enabling and helping? What boundaries should I have in place if my adult child moves back home? What should I do if it seems my adult child is not maturing into adulthood? What's a healthy and appropriate way to relate to my adult child's significant other? And how can I support my adult child if I don't support their values? Is it even possible? Well, if you've wondered such things, I'm telling you what, you've come to the right place. Jim Burns joined me today to talk about his new book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children, Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. This book is full of practical advice. We've got three copies to get into your hands, so you can start right now getting on the drawing by emailing middays@myfaithradio.com. And as you know, I always love to hear from you. Chime into the conversation with things you've learned in parenting your adult children, or maybe you're an adult with parents and you feel like you're being parented in a way that's helpful or not so much. We'd love to hear from you as well. Chime in to the conversation, 877-933-2484. Not by calls, but we're taking texts today. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Jim Burns is president of Homeward. He's the executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. He speaks to thousands around the world each year. He's an accomplished author. He and his wife, Kathy, live in Southern California and have three grown daughters, two sons-in-law, and two grandchildren. Jim, so good to talk with you. Welcome back to the show.
Susie, great to be with you. Always great to be with you. And here we are talking about adult children. And I can remember talking to you when my kids weren't adults and your kids weren't adults.
That's exactly right. We're in such similar stages.
Up.
Yes, we have. Indeed, we have. Well, you know this. I love to start out by talking scripture. And I'm wondering if you either have a life verse or just one you've been thinking about these days you can share with us.
Well, you know, one of my life verses is Philippians 4:13, a verse that so many people know. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. And just, I was suffering for the Lord yesterday in Honolulu. I was speaking, I think I spoke 15 times in 10 days, but I couldn't get anybody to feel sorry for me. And I was signing books, and I always sign my book, Philippians 4:13, and a woman asked me, I don't think somebody has asked me this in 10 years, but why do you put Philippians 4:13? And I went, that's a great question. And I actually had to think way, way back to remember that that is, I want that as a mindset in my head and in my life that I can do all things, meaning I can have a strong marriage. I can be a more confident parent. I can, handle finances better, whatever, because I can do it through Him. And I'm convinced that Kathy and I wouldn't be married and our kids wouldn't be thriving like they do. They're not perfect and our marriage isn't perfect, but we're thriving because of what He has done, not because of what we've done. Both of us raised in non-Christian homes, became Christian before we got married, and we see that as the real foundation. So that's a really important verse for me. Not just isn't this nice, but it is kind of breath for my life.
And foundational, and that's exactly why we asked that question, Jim. Thank you so much for that. Well, if I remember right, you weren't really setting out to write this book about doing life with your adult children. So talk about how it was first inspired and born in your heart.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. It actually is because I was in Hawaii. Because I live in California, I tend to speak in Hawaii more than, some. And our friends called us up. They have an event that I was at last week called the HIM Convention. They've got about 4,500 people who come to this convention. They said, hey, would you do a workshop along with a general session? But would you do the workshop on parenting your adult child? I started laughing. I said, no, but don't put a workshop during that time because Kathy and I are desperate. I think our kids were in college and they had said they were adults, but we seemed to still be paying for a lot of stuff. And, they weren't always acting like adults. And they came back to me and said, no, we really want you to do it. So I love these people. And I went, okay, I'll do it. And so I read books. And as I was speaking, I said, sometimes adult children violate your values. Sometimes they stray from faith. Sometimes they have different views than you. Sometimes you don't like the person that they're either dating or going to marry or whatever. And these people, the people in the workshop groaned. I mean, and I went, wow, People may groan silently when I speak, but these people groaned out loud. And I went, we're onto something. And so that was kind of a catalyst for me to keep digging and keep talking about it. And, you know, Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the U.S. And so our parenting seminars are typically for younger kids, about younger kids, of parents of younger kids. But we kept getting the questions about parenting the adult child. So it was in the world that I was living. And so over a period of, somebody asked me how long did it take you to write the book. I said 10 years because, you know, Kathy and I had to still learn how to do certain things and we had to learn not to parent our kids, but to do life with our kids, move from adult to adult child to adult to adult. So, yeah, we learned a lot, but it was kind of that catalyst was these people wanted me to speak on something I really didn't want to speak on.
Well, one of the things I love about your work, Jim, is that you're so accessible and you're honest and real, and there's no pretense with you. Appreciate that so much. We're going to get to these principles. Friends, this is such a hands-on, practical application book. I want so much for you to have a copy if you are in that season of life. You can email middays@myfaithradio.com, but also text and chime into the conversation, 877-933-2484. And I hear dear listener just texted in, and I hear this scenario so often. I want you to speak to it, but this dear one says, I'd love to have this book. I have two adult sons who decided they're atheists, and because I'm a Christian, I'm not worth having a relationship with. I'm struggling with little to no contact, have a daughter who's remained in the faith and a very close relationship with them, but I'm lost with the boys. And Jim, I'm telling you, if I've heard that story once, I've heard it 50 times, where not only are they walking away from the faith they were raised in, but then they become estranged, like I'm just gonna shrug you off as well. That is excruciating. To me, that's a double-edged pain, but speak to it if you would.
Well, isn't that? I mean, it is painful and it's heartbreaking. And one thing I say to parents is that the kids, as adults, do live in seasons, and so they have strayed from their faith. But you can't be a one-topic parent. So what she's got to be able to do is, her heart is broken. They know how she feels. They know what she believes. And so I think she develops a relationship with them, you know, outside of just talking about faith issues. I don't know her situation, but I find that a lot of people, when their kids do something like that, that's all they kind of talk about to their kids. And it's probably time to say, they know, you know, I said to a woman not too long ago, do they know what you believe? Do they know how you feel? Okay, fine. Now go take them out to dinner, talk about whatever they're into, you know, develop a relationship just like you would with a non-Christian out there that you might work with. You're going to love on them. You're going to care for them. Go, you know, not overboard, but go every birthday, make sure there's things, contact when you can. And I think most of the time, Susie, I'm not sure what they do with their faith, but I think most of the time they actually do come back around with mom or dad. And I also think that sometimes they do come back around with their faith once they start having kids, they get marriage. So, you know, you just don't give up.
And boy, the importance of the parent, you even talk about this in the book, not beating yourself up, remembering who you are. It seems like we could make some critical errors in this very painful in-between season in grasping to get them back, as you say, becoming a one-topic parent. And I've used this example several times because it riveted me, but I had two young men in studio years ago, and they both had walked away from their faith and into a life of homosexuality. And one of the moms was just grasping at him, grasping for him. But finally, the Lord spoke to her and said, put your own oxygen mask on first. You need to put your roots down in me, and he will start to see the reflection, the countenance of joy on your face. And it's exactly what happened. She started to go after it with the Lord in such a deep way that she, every time her son saw her, she had joy. She loved on him, but she was like, you know, your choices will have consequences, but I'm choosing to send my roots down in the Lord. So how are you today? And he said the contrast of dark and light became so stark that every time he would leave her, he said he knew he was walking into darkness. One day he woke up and he heard the little voice, the inner voice, are you tired of living in the dark? And he said, I am. And he walked right back to his faith, back to reconnection with his mom. And I just think that is such a powerful example of, we need to care for our own souls when we're in that in-between time. Love for you to say a word, if you would.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually a great story, because what it is that, you know, she like you, I love your illustration about the oxygen mask, but, you know, she got emotionally and spiritually healthy herself. And there really is a contrast. I see that all the time with parents who, their kids are struggling, and yet they'll end up coming back to the parent who, you know, who really does have who's grounded, who has a deep faith, who's doing well in life. And, you know, again, we never thought this was going to happen, but we just have to be, you know, absolutely patient. And sometimes they come back with some bruises and bumps that we wished our own children didn't have. But that is the case. So that's great advice. And the woman who texted you, I know her heart to be broken. But what she wants to do is get as emotionally healthy as she possibly can, as spiritually healthy as she can, have people around her so that when some, you know, one of those boys is going to crash, we want them to come back to her and God, of course. And it's not going to happen if she's just, you know, making that one topic a big issue.
Boy, the one topic parent, that's just, I think, a light bulb moment probably for many. But she could start building bridges now, as you said, based on things that they care about. And I think people know when they're a project, know when they're when the other person has an agenda. Yeah, I'm just trying to convince you to come back to my way of thinking versus I'm going to just release you to God and enjoy who you are as a person. I know that takes so much depth and grit, but it is possible, isn't it?
It is possible, but I think you do have to make sure that you do have replenishing relationships around you where you can be real. And I think sometimes even in the Christian community, if our kids have strayed from faith or if they've walked out or, you know, these are atheists, we sometimes are so shame-filled that we don't want to talk to anybody about it. So there's this silent shame factor that goes along with parents when their kids are, you know, not walking the way that they wished. And, you know, that's where we have to get over that and just share with people who can come alongside of us and really be those replenishing relationships for us. And it gives us hope. I mean, the more and more Kathy and I have spent time talking with couples who have had kids who have kind of strayed and then, you know, eventually, you know, kind of meander back, if you would. They don't seem to sometimes run. They kind of meander back. You know, that's really insightful for us. One of our daughters said she had to disown our faith to own her own faith. Well, today she's a strong Christian, but there was a season of kind of wandering. And we really needed to be around other people who had had kids wander and then have the hope that, you know, they could come back. And you know, some of that we didn't know because Christy was in college when that was happening. So she wasn't really, you know, checking in on us on some of the decisions she was making. Not so much decisions, actions, but more intellectual decisions about her relationship with God. But with that, when we kind of understood, it was so good to have people around us who we could be real with and who could be real with us. And again, it's hard because you do feel, well, it must be me. You know, we were saying things like, oh my gosh, if we would have not gone on that trip, but she could have gone to that mission trip, you know, with the youth group, and we chose to go to Florida and have fun. Well, come on, we should have done something. You know, we're playing the what if, should have, you know, kind of thing. That's not good for anybody.
Wow, very good. We're going to pause here. Talking to Jim Burns. His book is fantastic, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. Now we're going to walk through some of the principles in the book. Keep the texts coming. You want to chime in? Love to be able to pray for you. But maybe you've got questions, comments, what your experience has been, either as an adult with parents or your parents working and dealing with your adult children. Text in 877-933-2484. Email if you want in on the book drawing, middays@myfaithradio.com. We'll be back in a moment. Song to remember that our feet are on the rock. If you're parenting adult children, there's times you may feel like you're on shaky ground because everything around you is shaking. But you know what? In Christ, your feet are on the rock and you're more secure than you could know. And he promises wisdom when you need it. I'm Susie Larson. Welcome to Middays, talking to my friend Jim Burns, who's written an amazing book titled Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Keep Your Mouth Shut and the Welcome Mat Out. He explores he's really defined some amazing principles that are so applicable. We're going to get those in a moment, but I know we've got people texting in with questions, advice. I'll throw that number out one more time, 877-933-2484. And this dear listener says, thanks so much for the topic. I believe my early 30-year-old daughter, who is a Christian, is also an alcoholic. She's admitted she drinks. She lives near us but rarely contacts us, told me at one time not to talk to her about drinking. I fear she's getting deeper and deeper into trouble. I've been praying. Anything else I can do?
Well, again, that's, you know, what tends to happen, Susie, is that, you know, the pain, people's pain starts coming out when I have conversation with people on this subject. And this is obviously, some deep pain. And she, this grown daughter is violating values. She probably is an alcoholic, if that's what the mom thinks. And, this is what's hard, is sometimes we have to, continue to pray and be, I think sometimes the issue, even when they know they're going against the values of the parents, values of, against God, is they still need this, they have this question in their mind, do you still love me? And so with the mom, again, it's almost the same advice I'd give on any other kind of value, like even if they were walking away from faith, is, yes, I love you, but at the same time, as a parent, we have to be able to offer kind of a tough love. And tough love doesn't mean that you're mean to your kids. It means I love you. And yeah, there's some consequences to your life and lifestyle. And here's how you can get help for your alcoholism, call it what it is. But, I can't do that for you. She's an adult child. You can't bail them out. You're going to have to find wisdom and counsel from on these difficult issues from other people around you. And, the hard part, I think, for a lot of us is, I say relinquish your children to God's care. I have a it's funny, I kind of taught this prayer to Kathy, but we say this all the time kind of together. Something like, I release my children to your loving care and tender mercies, period. It's just a short prayer. I release, my child to your loving care and tender mercies. And that sounds like an oversimplification, but it's changing our mindset. It's one of the, I think, hardship, like what this young woman is going through, what the mom is going through, is, often, I love this, it's a C.S. Lewis quote. He says something like, hardship often prepares an ordinary person for an extraordinary destiny. And maybe, this young woman has a destiny. Another quote that I love, that I actually have in the book, is, good thing Easter is a season and not just a day, because some resurrections take time. Amen. And I would say that to her, that, I come from a family with alcoholism. I've seen people crash, and I've seen people crash and then get help. And sometimes she's going to have to go to the, to the bottom. But you can't want it more than they want it. That's kind of one of the principles in the book. But that's what's so hard, is you got to wait till they want it just as hard as you. And, this season in her life, her daughter doesn't want it that bad. But again, still keep the relationship going. So if the girl feels shame too. I mean, the young woman feels shame that, because she knows where she's at. She knows what her mother feels. And so again, you got to go past that. And that's why I started with, do you love me still? Yeah, I love you still.
And this might, I agree with you. I'm sure that this mom is discerning something that's pretty deep and significant. So listener, I want you to know I'm not speaking to you, but I want, for broader context, to explore the idea too. But there are times when the young adult kids maybe have a glass of wine with a meal once in a while, because that flies in the face of maybe how they were raised, it's easy to jump to really strong conclusions that maybe not be accurate. Again, not speaking to this situation, but I've talked with people who work with at-risk youth who are, high school and college, and these workers, these leaders who are in Christian ministry have said, I cannot tell you how many Christian parents have jumped to conclusions, overcorrected, sent their kids to us, and suddenly they're with kids who really are at risk. These kids may be dabbling, trying this or trying that, because their fear of the parent's fear, they suddenly leveled this at them. You're an addict, you're an alcoholic, mm-hmm. when really they were just dabbling. And I mean, I know I want to get to your principles, but that feels like an important point. Maybe you can expand on a little bit.
No, I think you're right. We sometimes do overreact. I mean, 85% of Christian kids are going to drink by the time they're 18. That doesn't mean that they're alcoholics. They're going to experiment. I mean, what is the teenage years? You and I have talked about this in the past, because I've spoken and written a lot on adolescence. But, it's the experimental phase. So, we can't absolutely go crazy as a parent if our kids are if they are dabbling. And I understand that's hard, because you go, oh my gosh, where could this go? That would be us, because of alcoholism in my family. If I saw alcohol around anybody, it scared me. It didn't mean that it was horrible, but it just scared, it would scare me. But at the same time, we have to understand that we have to discern when they're really in trouble and when they're not. And yet at the same time, we have to make sure that if they are moving in a direction that's scary, like alcoholism, that we, that we do help them nip it in the bud. Younger, the earlier, the better. But when they're adults, we can give them the support and the love and the encouragement and the resources and the direction. But after a while, we've got to be able to say, when you're ready, here it is. I've got it. Yeah. I've got the help for you. But right now, let's go out shopping, or let's go to a ball game, or whatever it might be, and just relate.
Yeah, they want it more than you do. Let's get them. We'll talk about that one in a moment. But your first principle, I love this, you're fired. Your role as a parent must change. I love that. Really, yeah. Say more.
Well, I mean, we've devoted 2 decades of our life, you know, raising these kids. And all of a sudden, one day, they do say to us, well, I'm an adult. Treat me like an adult. And they really want that. And so what happens is your job description has to change. I mean, it's not like you're fired as a parent. They still call you mom. They still call you dad. But truly, our role does have to change. And that means that we have to give our kids the passport to adulthood. You know, in the news, even this last week, there's a lot about this snowplow parents. And, you know, parents are, in, you know, keeping their kids entitled. And really, what my concern is that is I think sometimes we need to be caring. But we can enable dependency, and sometimes parents will do that, and so, you know, we're fired as the day-to-day parent, and yet to tell somebody that, including probably Susie Larson and Jim Burns, to say that after, you know, dedicating 2 decades of our life and thinking about our kids, you know, at all times, that's tough, but, you know, that's our job. And the thing I find, too, Susie, is that, you know, it's a parallel journey. You know, you have to reinvent the relationship because, you know, my kids didn't know how to be adults in their relationship with us, and we didn't know how to treat them as adults. So it's kind of that, you know, that process of figuring it out together. But I think, you know, one of those big parts of kind of you're fired and your role has to change is we can be encouraging, but we just can't be intrusive. And too many parents are still trying to be in control when, in fact, that's not going to help them, because the bottom line is helping them become responsible adults. To do that, you've got to be able to let go, and that's when the legacy kind of really, you know, really happens. We also have to be in touch with our own life. I love this woman. I didn't even know that she ever spoke on adult children. I knew her as a children's book, Judith Vorst, who wrote Alexander and His Very Bad, Horrible New, you know, Day or whatever. I used to read it to our kids. But she said, letting our children go must be counted among our necessary losses. And so there's almost a grief process. I'm going to speak for my good friend John Townsend, who you know, wrote with Henry Cloud the book Boundaries and whatnot. I'm going to speak for him tomorrow. And I'm speaking on this subject, and they're counselors. And what I'm going to say is help adults understand that there really is a grief process and some loss, even though we're excited about a lot of it, stuff what happens if the kids are doing well, there's still this grief and loss because our identity is gone. Or at least it shouldn't be gone, but you know, we sometimes let it be gone because it's what we've been thinking about 24/7.
Very good. We're going to pause here. You know, you have plenty of writing to do, but I'm telling you, the idea of a mom of all boys, the grief even goes to a deeper place. My boys are great. They love me. Great wives. I'm so grateful. But still, raising them to leave and cleave is the whole intent. And so they leave and cleave. And one author friend said, when you're a mom of all boys, you go from center stage to a bit part almost overnight. And you got to be prepared for that. Talking to Jim Burns, his book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Keep your mouth shut and the welcome mat out. We're talking through the principles. The next one is keep your mouth shut and the welcome mat out. Unsolicited advice is usually taken as criticism. We'll unpack that in just a moment. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to have you listening today, talking to Jim Burns. He's got a brand new book out, and it's so practical. If you are a parent of adult children, you want this book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Keep your mouth shut and the welcome mat out, full of practical advice. We've got 3 copies to get into your hands. You can email, get in the drawing, middays@myfaithradio.com. Again, text your comments, questions. Love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. This dear listener writes in, says, I'd love to receive a copy of this book. I have 2 daughters, one of which lives near us, has been through a divorce, has had 2 boyfriends since, yet wishes to be married again. She loves Jesus. She seeks him daily. I just need wisdom in interacting with her. Any thoughts, Jim, for this dear mom?
Well, I actually think that's a good story. You know, I mean, she's seeking Jesus, and perhaps with that first marriage she didn't. So let's hope that as this young woman, you know, makes better decisions, she actually will eventually, you know, get married and it'll be better. I was with somebody yesterday and we were talking about the fact their second marriage, and they said our first marriage was a disaster because we knew the foundations and we didn't live it, and so we had to break that off. But now in our second marriage, you know, we're making those right decisions, and how good is the grace of God? So I think the woman just keeps on keeping on with her daughter. I love that story. And again, she's going to have to figure out, you're talking about the second principle, which is unsolicited advice is usually taken as criticism. So, you know, it's kind of like there was a movie called Field of Dreams, and, you know, they built this baseball diamond out in the middle of nowhere and said, if you build it, they will come. And I think what happens is when we do keep our mouth shut, in this case with this woman not giving too much advice to her daughter, that, you know, then the daughter's going to turn it into a mentor relationship and kind of a coach, and I think she'll get some great insight. Plus, she can be that woman who it sounds like her daughter's really open to it, you know, to give some of the resources of, you know, what does it look like to have a God-honoring relationship? And there's great resources out there for that. And, you know, so she has a lot she can, you know, say and do. But, again, she doesn't want to constantly be, you know, giving her the right thing or just being back to the one-topic parent, looking at her past and some of the, you know, mistakes or choices that she made that got her into this place. So I'm happy for that woman. I think her daughter's coming around. You know, the Bible says train up a child in the way that they would go, and then they'll return. But it doesn't say when, and sometimes it even says when they're old they return. So this daughter's returning earlier.
And I think affirmation would go a long way, you know. Honey,
yeah.
After all you've been through, you were pressing in and seeking God. I think that is absolutely amazing. And I just know
absolutely.
That when we come from a place of fear, our kids feel it. And she's well aware of her marriage failure. And, you know, I remember when one of my guys was wandering from the faith. And, again, it stirred up fear in me. And one of my other sons, who was my kid who lived in the corner as a child, he was my straightest arrow when he became older.
Yeah.
But he literally sat me down. He said, Mom, he says, your fear is showing. He says, you raised us right. What you need to do is grab him by the shoulders and say, son, I raised you right. There's so much good stuff in you. I know you're wandering right now, but I really believe between you and God, you're going to find your way back. And I have such confidence because I believe you've got it in you. And he says, that's what you need to say to my brother. And I thought, I've just been schooled. I mean, you're exactly right. And fear is never a good motivator, you know, and it changed everything.
So good. No, so good. I'm giving your son a high five. Over the years of us having conversations, I can remember some of this advice that your son's given. They're pretty awesome. I mean, that's great advice for all of us. And a lot of the parents and a lot of the folks who are listening, they've done a good job. And so just because, you know, your kids make a poor choice doesn't mean that you're a bad parent.
Right.
They're the ones, even as adults, who are making some of those poor choices. So, you know, our job is to do what we can to build that foundation. It'll never be perfect, and we'll see them return. I mean, I really believe that. And at the same time, we oftentimes know what we know the answer. This is what's hard on that unsolicited advice thing, as they take it as criticism. Because, you know, a lot of times I go, I know what to say. I honestly have the answer. They may not just want to hear it right in the same timing. So I have to bite my tongue. I've got some scars on my tongue, Susie, because I've had to bite my tongue when I've wanted to say, really? Sure? I have a little phrase in the book that says, but why does she need to go to Europe to find herself when I have all the answers for her life right here, right now?
I could just tell you. Well, this is so good. The 4 points you make in that chapter, I love this, that unsolicited advice is usually taken as criticism. One is, trust that experience is a better teacher than advice.
Yep.
Love that.
Yep.
Give respect, because no adult wants to be told what to do. You are now a mentor and a coach, and your words have the power to bless and to curse. Trust that experience is a better teacher than advice. Don't you think it's really wise to look, if when we are in a place of fear or control, it's a good indicator that faith needs to maybe lead the way instead of those two things?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if we look at our own lives, I mean, we learn a lot from our experience, and sometimes it's a poor choice that we made. And we went, oh, our finger is now burnt because we put our finger on that hot thing. Well, sometimes, as much as we want to make it all better for our kids, we can't. And so they're going to have to, you know, burn their finger, you know, so to speak, to remember that that's going to hurt and that there's another direction, and we need to be there for them before and after, but after they may come for some advice. Sometimes before, they just gotta go do it. Experience almost always is a better teacher than advice.
Yeah, so good. Why is it taking so long for my kids to grow up? This is chapter three, and the principle is you can't ignore your child's culture. Say more about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is really the first generation where our kids are millennials or Gen Z coming up right behind them. And so we were raised differently, and we did life differently. I mean, for example, if you're going to study their culture, you know, they're shaped by technology. They are a generation that really wants healthy marriages and healthy family once that happens, but they're meandering toward it. You know, Kathy and I got married right after college. That was almost a norm. Most of our friends, that was the case. That's not the case with this generation. I wrote a book called Getting Ready for Marriage. It's a, you know, premarital book, and I was focusing on a young man who's 29, a young woman who's 27, whereas just a, you know, a few decades before, it was like 22. So, you know, that part has definitely changed. And the other thing is this generation, whether they are Christian or not, they have a view that tolerance is one of the major traits of a loving person. So they may have a different view than some of their parents when it comes to some of the biblical principles. So they're still Christian, but they have a different view on the tolerance issue. Some of that we can learn from them in a good way, and some, you know, we're going to realize that we're going to, you know, stare at it, you know, a bit different. Those are some of the distinctives. But in that mindset, when we become students of the culture, we have to understand that they are being shaped by a culture that is not necessarily friendly to Christian values. And instead of hating the culture and just go hate, bad, I think we have to understand and show some understanding and empathy and let them talk. Kids always learn best when they talk, not when just you talk. You know, learn from them. I've in some ways, I've learned most of the things I want to learn about millennials and Gen Z from my own kids. Just saying, so what are they saying out there? What are they thinking? Why do they think this way? And then I'm having dialogue with them. And I think whenever you're, you know, looking at the culture, dialogue is better than monologue. But we want to monologue and say how bad it is. And it is bad. I mean, I totally agree with that in many ways. But I do think it's important for us to gain understanding. For example, technology. I mean, my kids, they are shaped by technology. And, you know, am I shaped by technology? Not as much as they are, but, you know, it's important to me. But they shop on the phone. They talk to their friends on the phone, meaning texting, not even calling. Their life is based around technology, where, you know, another generation it wasn't.
Wow. Okay, here's another one. Number four, how to raise an entitled child or not. They'll never know how far the town is if you carry them on your back. All right, take it from there.
Well, I think a lot of parents do carry their kids on their back. You know, one of the phrases is totally irony. You know, I wish my 22-year-old would schedule his own pediatrician appointments. You know, the irony is that, A, you're still scheduling the 22-year-old's appointments, and it's a pediatrician. You know, I mean, come on, seriously. So, you know, again, we see this in a big way. If our goal is responsible adulthood, we actually have to let them go. We have to negotiate some of the boundaries and expectations. We've got to clearly express those expectations. But we always have to keep in mind the goal is responsible adulthood. That's not easy. We have a friend of mine is a president of a Christian college, and some woman called and said, my son got a D on a paper, and it was an A paper, and I can't believe that this business, you know, professor. And I'm thinking to myself, why would this woman do this? Well, my friend, who's the president, talked to the business person and said, well, you know what, that was an F paper. I just gave grace to him. And he's really a good student, but he just didn't have a good paper. So my friend, the college professor, calls back the mom, and she goes, he's wrong. I wrote that paper. I have an MBA from Stanford, and I was the one who wrote that paper. He didn't have anything to do with it. Well, the irony is, are you serious? You're still writing your kids' papers?
Wow.
So, again, sometimes we just can't carry them at all times. And, you know, there's a phrase in the recovery movement that I like. Well, you earned it. So if they did something not so good, well, then they earned it. And, you know, I like to talk about another phrase that says the pain of discipline. It's the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. There's going to be pain in life. So some parents don't want their kids to have pain, so they're doing stuff for them. When back to the, you know, the issue that you talked about earlier is experience is a better teacher. So sometimes we just have to, well, it's a biblical principle. They reap what they sow. So that's what we've got to be able to do. Not easy for, you know, this is not an easy principle, but it's an important principle, especially if the kids aren't being, easy if the kids are being responsible, but if they're not being responsible, then, you know, this is a hard one. So we tend to overcompensate and raise entitled kids who, in some ways, then there's a failure to launch. And then we're wondering, well, why aren't they launching toward adulthood? Well, that's because they got a good life. We're doing it all for them. We're still paying for stuff, and we're still, you know, taking care of them in many ways when it's time to let them learn on their own.
Well, that's the next principle. Your job is to move them from dependence to independence. Maybe speak to the parent listening today who's realized, okay, you got me. I've been carrying some of the weight, carrying them on my back, making their appointments. You know, maybe they're still living in the basement, playing video games, whatever. What are some tangible, practical steps they can make for these adults?
Well, a couple things. One is they have to realize and I call them kids, but they're still, you know, they're young adults, but let's say they're boomerang, meaning they went away to college, they went into the workforce, and now they're back. Well, it's one of the things we say is it's the same house, but it's a different family. So you've got to still give them responsibilities. Our daughter Becca did this. She's a clinical psychologist now at 32, but she said, listen, my girlfriend is moving away. So that was her roommate. Can I come in for about 2 months and just, you know, land at the house? And we went, absolutely. You know, we were thrilled. And when she landed, we said, hey, by the way, now that you're an adult, here's some responsibilities. This isn't the, you know, Jim and Kathy Burns hotel. So here's some basic, you know, we want to have dinner with you twice a week, if that's okay, because we knew she was busy. She was going to grad school. We said, here's a brush. Your toilet is now going to be cleaned by you. And, you know, we gave her some of these kind of responsibilities, and actually she did pretty good with it. But it was really hard because Kathy, more than me, probably would say, oh, my gosh. I mean, when was the last time she made her bed? I'm just going to go make the bed for her own need. And I go, Kathy, please don't make that bed, okay? She's an adult. If we make the bed, then, you know, we're not helping her become that adult. We're helping her not launch. And obviously many things with me that I would do with money or various things. So, you know, the point being is that if we want these kids to thrive, we can't, you know, continue to do everything for them. There's even a syndrome, if you could look at this up, but there's a syndrome called failure to launch syndrome. And what they say is don't cook, don't clean, don't do laundry for them on a regular basis. Don't just hand them all kinds of money, but they basically need to be paying for themselves, paying their own gas, food, clothing, things like that. And then eventually, again, back to the money side, they need to become responsible financially. And in doing that, it's really – there's a psychological term called individuation, which means I have to move from – as a young adult – and I did this – interesting, you're talking about – I grew up with all boys. My mom is you. There were four of us. And I was so tied into my mom that I had to actually – when the Bible talks about leaving, man will leave his father and mother – and be united to his wife. I actually had to do that. That was really hard for me, but because I loved my mom so much, and I was so tied into her. But for me to have a good marriage, I needed to leave my mom, not leave her totally, but leave, you know, the total dependence on it, and even emotional dependence, and recreate the relationship. Didn't understand that as I was going through, you know, early marriage or whatever, of course. But that's what our goal is. Our goal is to have them be responsible adults. If we're doing everything for them, it's not going to work.
Well, you think about the whole idea of spoiling your child. When you spoil food, you ruin food. And you just look at what, you know, wealthy, wealthy kids who get everything. We want to protect our kids, want them to have everything. It ruins them. I mean, you watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You can't stand the rich kid. You love the one who's been at the bottom of the pile, who doesn't think everything revolves around him. You know, we want to protect them from so much. And yet the very hardships and when they don't get what they want all the time really builds character. I mean, it's an obvious principle, but we still seem to miss it.
No, it is. And you know, it's usually done with the right motives. We want our kids to thrive. We don't want our kids to have to struggle like we had to struggle or whatever it might be. So, you know, the parents have pure motives, but the problem is that the result of those motives cause kids to become entitled and not launch. And so we have to have that discipline to say, I'm sorry you're in that mess. Boy, I just hope you can, you know, get out of it. If you ever need any insight on it, you know, I've got some insight, but, you know, I'm sorry you're in that mess. And, you know, then put your head in the pillow and scream or, you know, pound on the shoulder of your spouse or whatever you got. Mm-hmm. But truly, we've got to let them, you know, find their way or they're not. And it's not just rich kids, by the way. You know, we see this, and we do see this with the wealthy a lot, but we also see it with just, you know, the mom who's still making, you know, lunch for the son, and he's playing video games until 1 o'clock and not getting a job, and she's kind of taking care of that. That's not going to help him launch.
Have mercy. We need to pause here. When we come back, we'll talk about this one. When your grown child violates your values, and as Jim had said earlier, you can't want it more than they want it. We've got another text that came in. One more segment here with our friend Jim Burns. Text in your comments, questions, 877-933-2484, or email middays@myfaithradio.com. More with Jim Burns in a moment. Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Jim Burns about his book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Keep your mouth shut and the welcome mat out. I chose that song for this last bumper because it's so important to enjoy your life. If you're in the time in between where your kids are breaking your heart and you're waiting for the breakthrough, you still have to enjoy your life. You've got to entrust them to the Lord and not live in that in the shadows, in the valley of the shadows, like you're postponing joy until you see them come back. And Jim, we're going to talk a little bit about when your grown child violates your values. But this dear listener writes in, she says, Years ago, I sought counsel from a pastor on how to parent my adult children. What were my boundaries with them? How would I encourage them? And how could I not interfere with decisions that I felt went against how I would have a relationship with them or with their parenting of their own children? This pastor told me that I could do permission parenting, which meant if they asked my opinion or sought my counsel, that gave me permission as a parent to give them my opinion, unless they were doing something illegal or someone was in physical harm. They were going to harm someone else or themselves. Okay, she said, those were the conditions. I have done this for many years, and it has worked beautifully along the course of the first with the prayer, seeking God's counsel, even when they give me that permission on something that they have sought my counsel on. This actually works in all relationships. I hope it makes sense. Hard to explain in a text. Elizabeth, thank you for that. What do you think, Jim?
I think Elizabeth is 100% right. That, and I love that. In fact, I wrote it down: permission parenting. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. I had an experience a while back. My daughter and her wonderful husband and kids were moving to Texas, which we were grieving like crazy. They're now moving back, so we're happy. Mm-hmm. But they were living at our house for about two months before they were going to move for finances and, you know, getting ready. And they were in a kind of semi-heated discussion about how they were going to move their stuff. And so I butted in and I said, Christy, Steve, I have an opinion. I have the answer. And Christy goes, not now, Dad, not mm-hmm. now. And I laughed because I went, wait, people pay me to give them advice and my daughter doesn't want the advice. So I laughed and they made a decision and I didn't say anything, bit my tongue. And so I asked for permission, didn't get it. And then about a week later, Christy said, hey, Dad, what was your opinion? And I told her, and she goes, well, Dad, why didn't you tell me? That's a good idea. And Kathy and I just laughed. But the point being that, you know, I really do think it's better. I think we respect them when we say, you know, do you want me to speak into that? I mean, I have a thought. And most of the time with my kids now, they'll say, sure. In fact, I can hardly ever – Christy, my oldest, would be the one who would say, not now, Dad. The other two probably not so much. But I think what that woman has, and I think the advice she got from her pastor, is really a good idea. You don't have to make it a huge thing, but, you know, asking permission. Now, again, when they violate their values, you were talking about that as a principle. You know, you can't want it more than they want it. When they violate their values, you've got to be able to, you know, have some thoughts, and at the same time, you know, you got to wait for the right moment. It's a little bit like, you know, it's kind of a fishing illustration, but you got to wait for the fish to bite. And, you know, in our mind, we want to give them that input right now. And other times what we have to do is kind of, you know, back off a little bit. And sometimes we're even angry. And one of the things I talk about in that particular principle is you can't dump your anger and frustration on them. And I think back to the permission that this fine woman was saying, Elizabeth, you know, that shows respect to them. And many times I think they'll want your wisdom and counsel on that.
I got to share how you make the difference, make a distinction, I should say, between a conversation and a lecture. I think this is just great. You know you're giving a lecture when you do most of the talking, your voice is raised, you sound a little preachy, you sound like you're speaking to a child, and your statements make you sound superior. You know you're having a conversation when you're listening to and reflecting on what the other person says. You engage in dialogue. Your tone and demeanor show respect. Your language is free from "you should" statements, and you have been given permission to speak into the other person's life. You know, the respect thing is really big. I want to revisit again when they're breaking your heart in just a moment, but I think that might even feel like a new concept because we're so used to being in authority over our children.
Sure, sure. That's really good. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, again, it is about showing respect to an adult and making an adult. I mean, nobody wants to be, you know, lectured and preached at. I mean, nobody. And so we tend to, and we kind of got away with that when our kids were younger because that's kind of part of parenting in some ways, maybe not all healthy. But we actually have to move that and show them respect. And I think even when they violate their values, your values, I should say, and sometimes their values, but when they do that, when we show respect and honor and a relationship, I really do believe that a lot of times when or if they crash, they're going to come back to you and seek your advice and wisdom because you're the one who is showing them the most respect.
So you know, we got to pray in about a minute or so, but I love what you'd said about that. You can't want it more than they do. And one of the pieces of advice you give is there's help here when you're ready. You're not ready yet, but I have help for you when you're ready. But if so, tell me about work or you kind of move on to something else about their lives. Is that right?
No, I think so. I have a friend who his daughter was having some real trouble, and he always had a list. And he ended up, she loved to snowboard, and so she one day he just said, "Hey, how about if we, you know, I want to take you away, and we'll stay overnight someplace, you know, and we'll go out to dinner, and we'll do some snowboarding." And that's all he did. He kept his mouth shut the whole time and just played with his daughter. Beautiful, wonderful time. At the end, the daughter texted him after he dropped her off and said, "Dad, I know you had a bunch of questions probably in your mind. You usually used to carry a list. And let me kind of give you an update on that because I think I am doing better, but still struggling with some things." And he went, "Oh my gosh, I didn't have to come in, you know, with a big hammer. And I just could experience my daughter and play together. And out of that, we connected." Sometimes words don't connect as much as connection causes you to have good words.
And building that bridge is so important. Literally have about 45 seconds. You have to come back, Jim, because I feel like there's so much more in this book that we haven't touched on.
Great.
But you do have to say a word about grandparenting because there's nothing like it.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is Susie, and I know we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but the fact is that when I did focus groups on this, this is when they smiled. You know, and I call it's party time with the grandkids. Being a grandparent may be your greatest legacy. And I have found that in my own life that what I want to do is be the kind of grandparent that the kids are drawn to. But I also know that, you know, I have more time and energy even on the spiritual side. And so I see it part of Kathy's and my job is not over. Our job is to continue to breathe spiritual legacy into the life of our grandkids. Our little 3-year-old James, he and I read through a children's Bible. And his parents, they loved that, but they were too busy to do that. When James comes in, he hands me the Bible. We start reading through it, and it was our goal to get it done, and we did it. So, you know, I think grandparents can't just say, "Okay, now I'm going to back off." No, it's time to be the greatest cheerleader. You do have to reinvent the relationship you have with your kids, and as a grandparent with your own children. But you know, stay connected. If they live in the area, be their chief babysitter. Take those kids when you can. And I realize everybody can't do that, but I think that when you have in your head that you can have a great influence, so many people say, "My influence was my grandmother who prayed for me and who spent a lot of time with me, and we baked together, or you know, she watched me at all my games." I mean, that's what our goal has to be.
Jim, this has been great conversation. Jim Burns, everyone. Title of his book, Doing Life with Your Adult Children. Thanks so much for tuning in today. A shout out to my amazing producers, Carissa Rogers, Kim Sanders, who make every day brighter, every show better. Can't wait to meet you back here next time. Walk intimately with the Lord. It's impossible for him to fail you. Meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Susie Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Susie Larson.